science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week I want to continue on with the theme that I introduced last week, which was about the future of education and the way that science and technology is being used. Now, last week I concentrated on the Western world and I said that I would do a look at what was happening in developing nations and in a future episode. And I originally was going to do it in a few weeks, but I thought, you know what, no, let's just continue the theme and round it off over the 2 weeks. So I'm really going to talk about how developing nations are leveraging science and technology to elevate education in these countries and to try and level up in many respects with the more affluent Western countries that we talked about last week. So without further ado, let's just get straight to it. So I think it's fairly obvious that developing nations do have quite a lot of challenges faced by educators in those countries. And these include just the infrastructure limitations as the primary problem, I think. So many schools in developing nations struggle with inadequate infrastructure, including insufficient classrooms even. They haven't got enough classrooms. I mean, that's mind-boggling to people in the West who just take these things for granted. But there's lack of electricity or reliable power, poor sanitation facilities and more. And in terms of connectivity, there's limited access to the internet and unreliable power supplies further hinder the integration of digital technologies in education. But it's even more basic than that. There are resource constraints, shortage of educational materials. Schools often lack essential reading materials such as textbooks. There's a lack of computers and laboratory equipment. And those are crucial really for effective learning. And there are funding challenges for them to get even up to the basic level of what you would expect in a school, because there's insufficient funding from the government and local sources in those countries and regions to invest in educational resources and infrastructure. And on top of all that, you've got teacher shortages and training. So there's insufficient qualified teachers and teaching assistants in these areas, a significant shortage, in fact, and that's got to affect the quality of education. And many teachers lack access to ongoing professional development, same with the teaching assistants where they exist in these regions as well. And that leads to a really high student to teacher ratio. So overcrowded classrooms make it difficult for teachers to provide individual attention and support to students. You've also got cultural and language barriers. So there are diverse linguistical contexts within many of these developing countries where a standardized language isn't necessarily a given. So, you know, you've got various dialects which have different meanings across these countries. So, and in some cases, even completely different languages, even within one country, but within regions, they've got different languages as their base language. So you've got all these kind of issues as well. And you've also got to look at the fact that there are cultural differences and gender norms, which limit educational opportunities for certain groups, especially girls. Many of these countries don't treat women in the same way that the West does, and it, you know, and unfairly they are excluded from many educational practices. It does make it difficult for educators to reach and maximize the benefits of an educated society when certain groups are excluded or downgraded within an education limited education rollout, even at that. And there are also socioeconomic challenges. So you've got poverty and inequality hardships. They force many children to drop out of school to support their families, in fact, leading to high dropout rates and low enrollment. And all that is compounded by health issues. Poor health and nutrition can affect students' ability to attend school and perform academically. If you're hungry or you're not well because of you drank some water that's bad, you're not going to be able to concentrate in classroom. And so you've got all those kinds of issues feeding into it. And the technological divide between the affluent West and the developing countries is huge. There's a digital divide that is more than significant. And even the difference between in the West when you've got urban and rural areas is nothing compared to the kind of digital divide that exists in these developing countries. And again, the teaching staff don't really get the time or the space to be able to look at new and emerging technologies and how to integrate them into a classroom and education environment. So you've got all these factors swirling around which make the educator's job in these countries next to impossible when you look at what we've got here in the West. So they're the challenges. So let's look at the initiatives and innovations that are being taken in these countries to try and circumvent some of those issues. So mobile learning platforms have started to be used on a much more effective and targeted way. Mobile phones are being widely used as a viable tool for delivering educational content. And initiatives like SMS-based learning and educational apps trying to bridge that gap really between students without access to traditional resources. So programs like the Enenza Education in Kenya uses mobile technology to provide interactive learning content and quizzes via SMS, reaching students in remote areas. And the quizzes are there to reinforce the fact that the students have actually read the content and gone through the content that's been sent to them via these digital devices, these apps on their phones. Solar powered classrooms are springing up as well. So there are sustainable energy solutions like solar energy to harness the sun. Solar energy is being harnessed to power schools and provide reliable electricity in off-grid areas, and that enables the use of digital tools and resources as well during the periods, obviously, where the sun is shining throughout the day. And battery technology is catching up, so it can store excess energy in batteries for when the evenings are moving in but classes still need to be run. So again, they've got the solar powered internet school project in South Africa using converted shipping containers equipped with solar panels to create fully functional classrooms. The ingenuity of educators in these countries should not be underestimated. And when you look at the facilities and the kind of resources that teaching staff in the UK in particular have, and always moaning about this and that and this lack and that lack, and then you look at what these educators are trying to do in these developing countries and they're coming up with these ingenious solutions to problems, you have to start to wonder really about where. You know, sometimes we get lulled into this. We expect things to be at a certain level and that level has to be provided by others, rather than what can we do to enhance that level, or what can we do to make sure that level is consistent across the board. We don't tend to do that because we expect a centralized approach and everything to be driven by those funds and by other people to do it. Whereas in the developing countries, people are having to roll up their sleeves and just get stuck in. There's a greater emphasis on offline educational content. So there's local content delivery like offline servers which have preloaded educational content which allows students to access learning materials and interact with them without internet connectivity. So the Colibri platform provides offline access to a vast library of educational resources, including videos, textbooks, interactive exercises, and all can be tailored to a local curricula. AI is starting to really be utilized as an adaptive learning technique. So personalized learning experiences driven by AI is offering personalized paths, and it adapts to individual student needs and provides targeted support. So even when a teacher is not present and not able, the system itself using AI starts to adapt the lessons accordingly to the needs of each individual student that's using, you know, they may be learning from home, but they're still getting an educational content that's being mapped out for them by the use of these AI education programs. So you've got the 1 billion project use of AI, for example, to deliver personalized maths and literacy lessons to young learners in Malawi, and that improves engagement and outcomes. And virtual reality and augmented reality are also being used more and more. So they've got immersive learning environments where they can create interactive and engaging learning experiences, particularly in subjects like science and technology. The VR-based educational program Labster provides virtual science labs, and that allows students to conduct experiments and explore complex concepts safely. Still need to provide the equipment for the student to be able to access these augmented and virtual reality sessions, but it means that they don't necessarily need to have a classroom infrastructure also built for the students to go to. There's also community-based learning hubs are being set up across these countries. And so community centres equipped with technology provide students with access to digital resources and a conducive learning environment. And an example of that is the Hole in the Wall project in India, which has been set up in computer kiosks in rural areas and encourages self-directed learning and peer collaboration amongst children. And also NGOs have got a part to play. So there's some great partnerships and collaborations going across sectors in these developing countries, including governments, NGOs, tech companies, local communities, all playing a role in scaling educational technology initiatives. So, for example, you've got UNICEF and Google teaming up to provide the Project Connect initiative, which aims to map every school in the world and provide them with internet connectivity. So they're just some of the initiatives that are going on. And we've mentioned some of the bodies that are trying to take the lead in this, but I think it's worthwhile looking at some of these chief sponsors and key players and their role in these educational initiatives. So, for example, you've got UNESCO, UNESCO. They play a pivotal role in promoting global education, providing global policy guidance and supporting education systems through initiatives like the Global Education Coalition, which brings together partners to ensure continuity of learning during crises. UNICEF, of course, focuses on equitable access to education, particularly for marginalized children by providing resources and advocacy and support for innovative educational solutions. The NGOs, non-governmental organizations, they have projects like Room to Read, which works to promote literacy and gender equality in education across Asia and Africa by establishing libraries, publishing local language books, and supporting girls' education. There's another initiative that NGOs run called Teach for All, which is a global network that recruits and trains teachers to work in underserved communities, and that aims to expand educational opportunities and improve students' outcomes across the board. Private sector and tech companies are also involved. Google.org, for example, supports education through projects like Project Connect, and it also provides grants for educational technology startups focused on developing countries. Microsoft have also got their fingers in this pie, so they provide digital skills, training, and access to technology through programs like Microsoft Philanthropies, which partners with NGOs to enhance digital literacy. But again, as in the West, Microsoft and Google don't just do this out of the kindness of their heart. The projects that they deliver are based on their own technologies. So Google will deliver projects based on Google technology on the Google platform, and whereas Microsoft will obviously develop initiatives and local projects based on Microsoft technologies. But that said, it's better to have these investments and projects happening than not to have them at all. There are also governmental partnerships. So you've got public-private partnerships and collaborations between government and private entities to fund and implement these educational projects, such as providing digital devices in schools or developing localized educational content. And you've got national education policies with governments in developing countries often working with international donors and organizations to align educational initiatives with national development goals. And the philanthropic foundations of people like Bill and Melinda Gates and the Open Society Foundation, they support education reform and innovation, focusing on inclusive education and the integration of technology into learning environments, and also improve the quality of education and increase access to technology in low-income regions as well. And we shouldn't forget grassroots organisations, often teaming up with other community groups and private businesses. You can have local initiatives playing a really crucial role, I think, in implementing educational programmes, particularly in remote areas where larger organisations may have limited reach. They also seek to empower local educators by providing training and empowering local educators to really lead initiatives to ensure sustainability and relevance to the community's needs. And then if you look at networks like the Global Partnership for Education, or GPE, they bring together governments, donors, civil society to finance and support education in developing countries. And they have research and innovation hubs, which also collaborate across the board with research initiatives focusing on developing context-based educational technologies and methodologies. So we have these initiatives, we have the will, we have foundations and donors wanting to leave their mark by helping to improve education across the world. But you've also got to look at some of the countries that are really pushing it themselves, because they realise that an educated population is actually going to be beneficial to the country by helping raise productivity levels, if you want to do it on that basis. But also, an educated population are more likely to want to be involved in shaping and developing the country in which they live. So Rwanda, for example, they have a visionary leadership which has made significant strides in education by prioritizing ICT integration. The government's Vision 2020 plan focused on transforming the country into a knowledge-based economy, and they're well on the way of pushing forward with that. I mean, all the problems in Rwanda aside, and some of the political issues and so on, they really have grasped this nettle about educating their population. They're trying through One Laptop Per Child initiative, which has distributed laptops to primary school students, promoting digital literacy from an early age. And they've also invested heavily in teacher training programs to ensure educators are equipped to leverage technology in classrooms much more effectively. You've got Kenya, which has got a digital learning program, which aims to provide every child with access to digital devices and learning materials. The program has already reached thousands of schools across the country. You've got innovation hubs in Nairobi, for example, known as the Silicon Savannah, and they host numerous tech startups and innovation hubs focused on education technology, fostering a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship, all again to deliver benefits for Kenya as a country. And they've also implemented a series of curriculum reforms, making it more inclusive of digital skills and competencies, which prepares students for a tech-driven future. These are countries that have realised that actually having a tech-driven economy and their own population servicing that tech-driven economy is all to the good for those countries as a whole, and not just for rich companies from the West to step in and make investment, sure, but also reap the benefits. No, this is homegrown initiatives, and whatever problems that these governments have elsewhere, they have to be applauded for the realization that education is key to the success of any country. Bangladesh has initiatives including it's made remarkable progress in increasing access to education, especially for girls, through government and NGO partnerships. Mobile education initiatives like Come Learn have used mobile technology to deliver educational content to remote areas, which enhances literacy and numeracy skills. And they've set up community learning centres. The country has established these centres to provide access to digital resources and vocational training, empowering local communities. Not to be left out, but India have also looked at this, and they've got the Digital India campaign, which is an initiative that aims to transform India into a digitally empowered society and knowledge economy with a strong focus on education. They're funding edtech startups. They've got actually a thriving edtech ecosystem with startups like Bayou's and Una Academy providing online learning platforms that cater to millions of students in India. And they are putting in their own, the government there, putting in cash, hard cash and expertise to support initiatives that integrate technology and education, providing a digital infrastructure and training for teachers. Ghana has got an ICT and education policy that's at the heart of their education policies, and that outlines a comprehensive plan to integrate technology into education systems, focusing on digital literacy and teacher training. And within that, there's partnerships for progress, so collaborations with international organizations and tech companies, which have facilitated the deployment of digital tools and resources in schools. And they've got a emphasis clearly on STEM education, science, technology, engineering and mathematics education, with initiatives to encourage girls in particular to participate in science and technological fields. Again, these countries have realized that an educated, well-balanced, leveled up population that is necessary for these countries to actually develop a thriving economy of their own. And again, all these countries may have different ways of doing things and different belief systems and some practices that people in the West don't understand. For all that, there is clearly some governmental commitment in these countries and leadership being shown by them as well to provide the policy frameworks which are crucial for driving educational transformation and ensuring this sustainable progress. But they've also reached out to local communities and stakeholders in the education process, fostering ownership and supporting successful implementation of initiatives. Again, this idea that people have to do it for themselves. It's not just a spoon-fed, you turn up at school, you get everything done for you, and then you're sent off back home. It's literally they are enabling people in these countries to actually roll up their sleeves and get stuck in and becoming stakeholders in their own education. Now that leads me on to the final part of this episode, and it's basically, why is important? Why should you care as a Western listener? Why should you care about how these countries are developing their own education policies? We've said that an educated population is necessary for the economic success of any country. But there's lots of other reasons why it's really important to elevate global educational standards. It's not just about economic growth and development, although that's important. So you've got human capital investment, education is a critical driver of economic growth as it enhances human capital, which leads to increased productivity and innovation, to be sure. But it also reduces poverty by equipping individuals with skill and knowledge and the experiences that they need, education empowers them to secure better employment opportunities, thereby reducing poverty levels in certain regions. And it also enables the governments of those countries to put investment into more highly skilled industries that will improve the economy throughout the country. And they can, if they can staff and resource those areas and those industries with homegrown and educated people, then that makes much more sense and much more delivers a much more lucrative return on the investment to that country. It also means a well-educated workforce can adapt to changing economic conditions and technological advances, and that ensures long-term economic resilience. They can take a shock more easily, more readily. But we also need to look at how you can bridge inequality gaps through education. You have a more inclusive society. You have an education system that promotes social equality. It provides equal opportunities for all, regardless of gender, socioeconomic status, or geographical location. It empowers marginalized groups by giving access to them to quality education, which in turn empowers marginalized groups such as women and minorities in these countries to participate fully in society and decision-making processes. And it leads to cultural understanding. Education fosters cultural understanding and tolerance, promoting peaceful coexistence in diverse societies, because children don't know any better. They get into a classroom with other children and it doesn't matter what their background are, they are children. And they learn to accept that from a very early age, that the differences don't really matter. It improves health and well-being, so improved health outcomes, because you've got an educated population that are more likely to make informed health decisions. That leads to better health outcomes and increased life expectancy, less money being spent on supporting a population that is ill because of they don't know the difference between what they should eat and drink and what have you. That basic. And we can drive that through by educating them so they know what to do, how to prepare food, how to store food, how to clean water, and so on. Family and community health. Education, especially for women, has a positive impact on family health, resulting in lower child mortality rates and improved nutrition. And it also has huge mental health benefits for these areas. Education contributes to mental well-being by providing individuals with a sense of purpose, some confidence, and some social connections that are outside of their immediate family. It's all to the good. The more that these countries can self-serve themselves and grow their economy themselves, then the less demands are being placed on other countries to step in and help, which means resources can be freed up across the board. All the money that the affluent West can put into a country can be spent on more beneficial programs rather than simply just keeping the basics going. It's got to be all about enhanced outcomes now, and we have to look at that as a world and level up as a world, which currently, obviously, we've got still too many people in powerful countries still focused on their own setup. So there are some global challenges and solutions to go with those as well. So education equips individuals with the knowledge and skills needed to tackle global challenges such as climate change, poverty, and inequality, whereas innovation and technology can foster technological advances, enabling societies to develop solutions to complex problems. Education is central to achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, particularly Goal 4, which focuses on ensuring inclusive and equitable quality education for all. And that, again, is something that we need to look at worldwide. And there's a moral and ethical responsibility, really. Universal right to education is a fundamental human right. and ensuring access to quality education for all should be an ethical obligation for the global community, especially the rich nations. The more that we can educate and level up the developing countries and level up the intelligence and the economy levels because of their productivity increases and health improvements, the less likely individuals in these countries are likely to turn to someone else to give them purpose, and that includes terrorist recruitment organizations, which, you know, they go into these poor countries, they go in and they target particularly excluded rural areas, and they recruit from these areas. And we're not just talking about the really, really poor nations, we're talking about any developing nation where people feel excluded. And a lot of these countries have a lot of people and many communities that do feel excluded. Even in the West, the affluent West, where we've got, you know, the benefits that far outweigh a lot of the inequalities in our society, you still get people turning to extremism because they need purpose or they feel excluded. And education is a way to make everyone feel included. All that then leads to us building a better future across the world. Education is definitely the way to do it, because societies can build a better future for generations to come, hopefully characterized by peace, prosperity and sustainability. Feeling a sense of global solidarity can elevate global education that requires collective action and solidarity across nations, and that means that we can support developing countries in their educational endeavors, because there's a reason beyond just being able to cut the aid budget. By leveling up, we can actually make sure that everyone starts to see the world as a global society. I know that sounds a bit wishy-washy, but actually it's something we should all be aiming for. We shouldn't be having someone looking over their borders and saying, well, they've got more water than me, or they've got more coal than me, or they've got more wheat than me, and therefore I'm going to invade them. We need to be looking at it from the point of view, they've got more coal than me, but I've got this knowledge-based industry, and we can actually help them maximise the output of their coal, or replace their coal with another technology that's more sustainable for the environment, or minimise the damage of getting that coal used up while we're developing. And in return, we can expect some benefits back. It's just all these things have got to be looked at, and we've got to stop being cavemen and always taking by force what we think we should have. And the role of education and the role of technology, in particular in education, is crucial to that. We need to, therefore, expand access. Technology plays a crucial role in expanding access to education. We know that, particularly in remote and underserved areas. We need to enhance learning experiences, and we can do that through digital tools and resources which make education more engaging and effective. And crucially, and this is a lesson we haven't learned even in the West, we need to provide the tools, but not just the school at the tools, but the actual desire to engage in lifelong learning. Technology supports lifelong learning opportunities, which enables individuals to continuously update their skills and knowledge in a rapidly changing world. But we have to engender a love of learning within that, and this is something that the West, with its obsession with making people pass exams so that they can become little robots in cubicles in call centres, rather than actually saying continuously want to learn, continuously want to adapt, because the more adaptive a workforce is and the more it is willing to accept new ideas or even to think up new ideas and new ways of working, then the more beneficial it will be for these countries and companies in the long run. And we don't get that. There's so many countries in the Western world, the UK especially, that doesn't see that just by getting the people over the line to pass an exam doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a productive little soldier when they leave school, because that's not what happens. What happens is the majority of people leave our education system here in the UK, and I'm sure it's the same in America and other Western and affluent countries, is they feel scarred by the entire process and they never want to learn again. They don't couch it in that term. What they say is, I am never stepping foot in school again. But that becomes, I'm never going to learn again. So they don't put themselves into environments where they can learn, where they can improve their skills, where they can learn new ideas and concepts. And it doesn't make them adaptable, because they have a rigid belief then that says, I've done with school, that's it. And we've got to get over that. And I can actually see a situation where in these developing countries where children are more, they see education not as a right, but as something that is exciting, that it's a privilege to have it. And they understand that and they go for it and they never stop learning if the tools are there. And we need to, that's what we need to do. So we need to, across the board, we need to provide tools and the encouragement for people to go into lifelong learning. But we need to get them started at a young age in the learning process effectively. And this is where the developing countries are really pushing as many ideas and trying as many initiatives as they can to level up from the ground up. Wouldn't it be great if the Western world, the affluent Western world, would also see the benefits of helping these countries develop an educated population across the board? And then we can all start to share the resources, we can all start to share the benefits, and we can all start to understand that a collegiate approach to looking at solving problems is a much more effective and less costly approach than the current snatch and grab kind of approach that the Western world and many world leaders across other work countries in the world seem to engage in. And that's the same with corporations as well. Huge corporations, they snatch and grab. We were talking about this the other day, and this is a future episode definitely, where there isn't even the pretense of customer service anymore. There isn't even the pretense of putting the customer first. It's, how much money can I make from this sucker today? That's it. You see it all the time, people charging money to provide a service, and then they don't provide the service, but there is no way to actually do anything other than just accept that they've taken your money and they're not going to provide the service. It's stupid. And we need to get over that. So that's an episode for future. But for right now, I hope you've enjoyed our little journey through all the different ways that education could be used to improve the lot of a population. And I'll be back next week. In the meantime, don't forget, you can go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum, and there'll be a post for you to comment on about the role of education as you see it and what ways we can improve education. There'll be a post for this episode in that forum, and you can go and do that. In the meantime, take care, everyone. Keep asking questions, and I'll see you next week. I've no idea what I'm going to be doing yet. I don't decide until a few days before, but I'll try and make it an interesting one for you. Talk to you soon.
Like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @DarrenInform for news, tips, and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.